We're joined by Michael Hurley of WBZ-TV, CBS Boston. Hello there, Michael.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. I don't know why I just noticed this, but I'm looking at your Twitter feed here, and it says you've tweeted 128,000 times. Which was your best one? Do you remember?
Still hunting that best one. Still hunting a good one, to be honest with you. I would say that's information I would have been better off not knowing, but it is reality. I mean, you can only hide from reality for so long. So that's my truth.
It's part of your job. So you're working when you're tweeting.
I think often, you know, we all got by just fine before Twitter existed. We had we didn't have this gaping void in our lives thinking we needed this app on our phones and our computers and overtaking our entire lives. So I think someday we might get back to it. But for now, I will do 128,001 as soon as this interview ends.
We appreciate that. Awesome. Let's see where to begin. So I'm not one to yell at the television. And so back in the early part of the Celtics season, rather than yell, I would just sometimes turn the TV off because I got frustrated with this team. But now, like a lot of people, I love these guys. That was pretty awesome last night.
It was. I'll tell you, I did turn it off because I went to sleep because they were up by about 30 points late in the third quarter. And I said, I think they got this one. I'll catch it on YouTube if I'm wrong. So I did appreciate that. But, yeah, no, they are a lot different than that team that we watched for the first half of the year. I think they've made that pretty clear. And I guess, you know, going into the playoffs, I thought Miami was a team that could knock the Celtics off. And I still think that's a possibility without a doubt because of just the mentality that Miami has. They're a tough team. They embody or follow the lead of Jimmy Butler in that sort of dog mentality. And so to see the Celtics come out and just we forget now, they were down early. They were down 11 to start that game and then just woke up and put forth a whooping. So to do that to a team as tough as Miami, I think speaks volumes. And I think we've got ourselves a fun little series here. I have no idea what to expect in Game 3 now.
No, I don't either, but you're right. It is going to be fun, and it's been a great postseason ride so far. The ride for the Bruins in the postseason was a short one, and it sure seems like changes are afoot, and it looks like Bruce Cassidy may be the guy. Do you think that's the way they will go, and is it the right move to make?
Yeah, it looks like the wrong changes are afoot. I look at this team that now for a few years has not been They've gotten what they've deserved. I think a second-round exit in the bubble was about how good they were. I think a second-round exit last year, that was an achievement for a team. That was about what they should have done. And then this year, winning a few games in the first round, but ultimately losing. I think that's how good they were. That's how they were built. They didn't have a defensive core that was going to get them any deeper than that. So I look at the GM who has just spent and spent and spent all of his draft resources at every deadline, trying desperately to cling on to his job and keep the team relevant in the playoff race. I look at a team that isn't really built to withstand the future. They're not built for the future. If they lose Patrice Bergeron, Sweeney admitted it, that could take years to replace. And that's basically all they have is that one line. So I think it's a team that if the ownership were more involved and more aware of the building of a hockey team, we would see maybe a different decision there. But I do think they need someone who can draft, who can develop, who can build a roster, because they could come back the way they are and try to add a piece or two and make the playoffs and lose in the first round again, but I don't know what you get out of that. I think you need a total, you know, restructure, reorganization, and they're not doing that. So, yeah, if Bruce Cassidy has to pay the price for that, I think that's just too bad.
And they're just, whether it's Cam Neely that needs to step in or whatever, there just doesn't seem to be any kind of a long-range or even a short-range plan.
Right, and that seems to be where they're at, you know. Sweeney's contract expires at the end of the playoffs, and Neely said, well, I wanted to see how the year went. And he saw how the year went and apparently saw enough to say, this is the guy we have to resign and keep running our team for a while. It does seem like Cam Neely likes Don Sweeney personally. They played together. They've known each other for a long time. Don Sweeney's a charming man. I'm sure he's very nice. But, you know, the results are the results. And this is a city that theoretically demands championships. Granted, the Bruins had a casual 39-year run without one, but I think they're not headed back there as long as Don Sweeney's in charge. And they came very close in 2019. A lot of things fell their way where they got to play Columbus and Carolina along the way to get there, and then a Blues team that wasn't very good, and they blew that. So I don't know that they're heading back there anytime soon with Don Sweeney running the show.
No, and it feels like, I don't know for how many years we've said, boy, they've got some talent if they could just get more scoring depth. And then, again, this year, that was one of the many bugaboos that let them down in the playoffs.
It's kind of funny now you say that. You hear a lot of David Krejci pining, like, oh, maybe they could get Krejci. Maybe they could get Krejci to come back. David Krejci spent the better part of a decade begging for them to put someone on his wing who could score. He was basically left without Pasternak, without Marchand, desperately hoping for someone who could play on his wing and score. And he actually spoke out, you know, and whined about it this year, rightfully so, when Pasternak moved down to work with Taylor Hall in the second line for Aaron Howla, of all people, to work with. So, that has certainly been an issue to me. You know, they've the development of the defense or lack thereof outside of Charlie McAvoy is a problem. I don't know who you have there. Carlo is not who they wanted him to be. Grizzlick is not who he wanted to be. And then, you know, Clifton is a good sixth or seventh defenseman, and they seem to have three or four of those guys, going back to when they signed John Moore for no reason for $3 million and used him as a seventh D-man. So a lot of poor decisions, I would say, up and down the board. And now as these, you know, cornerstone-type players are leaving, Char is leaving, Krejci's leaving, Tuukka's leaving, Bergeron might be leaving, you're really going to be stripped down and be left with a team that has really just slowly getting worse to the point where it doesn't seem like it could get better in short order.
Is Jeremy Swayman a legitimate number one goalie for a team that wants to compete?
He should be. I mean, I really like him as a player. I really liked him last year when we saw that 10-game sample. Was enough for me to say he should go in as the number one. I will say, concern-wise, he definitely petered off down the stretch. You know, Omark was the better goalie for the final month and a half of the season. But ultimately, when the playoffs were taking place and things were on the line, they looked to the goalie who's more fundamental, who's better, who's maybe calmer. So I do think they have a goalie in Linus Ullmark. But I will also say this, they sure as hell had a goalie in Tuukka Rask for the previous however many years. And that even that wasn't enough. So if Jeremy can get to the top of his profession for 7 or 8 years, he can make the Bruins as good as they were when Rask was the goalie, which is seems to be just not good enough.
Michael Hurley with us here on Downtown this afternoon. Tom Brady with some career news, going to Fox for a big old paycheck. Aside from the money, what have we seen in Tom Brady's past that would make us indicate that he would either want to do this or would be good at it?
You know, it's a great question. We all kind of look at Brady and he's not the most, I don't know, he's a little stiff, he's a little robotic, he's a little boring, I think is the best way to put it. And we say, could he really do this? But then you look at the guys at the top of the profession. You know, Chris Collinsworth does have a little bit of personality, I would say, but Troy Aikman just made a boatload of money. All Troy Aikman does really is say, watch this play, here's what happened. And then the next play happens, and then Troy Aikman says, here's what happened on this play. There's not a whole lot of, I wouldn't say we get to know Troy Aikman very much every Sunday, yet he is, you know, the number one, number two, whatever, color analyst in the profession. And then you had a guy like Tony Romo just come in, and he kind of stepped in with no experience or no practice and quickly became the top guy and makes a lot of money. So I'd say it's possible, just given the knowledge that Tom Brady has. I don't know that his knowledge will translate well to the average viewer. You know, the X's and O's doesn't really pop on Sunday afternoons. It'll have to be something more than that. But I will give you my hot take, because we saw yesterday or the day before that Fox plans on having Greg Olsen as the color analyst for the Super Bowl this year. I think the Buccaneers will be eliminated, you know, in the divisional round or the conference championship, and the big surprise will be Tom Brady making his debut during Super Bowl. During the Super Bowl. So save that one in your memory bank, and if I'm right, you can come back and say that guy's smart, and if not, you'll probably forget about it, and I'm good either way.
And that's exactly what we'll do. If you're right, we'll give you credit. If you're not, it never happened.
Maybe he could play and do color commentary at the same time.
If there's a man alive who could do it. We know it's TB12. What about the Patriots? What is the prioritization of Patriot needs before summer gets too far along?
Is it too late for an offensive coaching staff? Yes.
Possibly.
I'll say this. I mean, they got their starting quarterback just before July 4th a couple years ago. Granted, it didn't work out, but maybe they could have some sort of seismic change in the coaching staff before then. I don't think so. But that is theoretically a possibility. That to me is what I look at. You know, we want to say, can Mac Jones get better? Can Mac Jones take this? Look at Daniel Jones's second year once Joe Judge took over the Giants. It's concerning, and I think, you know, Patriots fans might be sensitive to hear ultra criticism in May, but Joe Judge is a concern for me. And him talking to the media last week in his condescending high school gym coach tone didn't really do anything to me to make me feel any better about their chances this year. It's just, look, you know, we'll do this. We're listening. That's what you're talking, and we're listening. I have concerns about that offense being run by Joe Judge. So to me, it's hard to look at other issues. You know, making up for J.C. Jackson is a huge issue in and of itself. I don't know that they have the personnel to do that, but it's defense. You have some coaching there. You have Bill Belichick running the show. You can kind of see how they could be league average, at least defense. I have major concerns about the offensive coaching staff, and short of hires between now and July, I don't see myself getting any assuaged. That's not a word I say out loud often, but I just tried it.
I like the way you dropped it there. That was good. Michael Hurley, CBS Boston, here on Downtown. Michael, thank you as always. Hope your weekend goes well, and we'll catch up with you again before too long.
Absolutely. Enjoy your weekend.
Thank you. Michael Hurley, here on Downtown.